Hi, you're listening to The Creative Classroom. I'm John Spencer, and this is my podcast where I explore the intersection between creativity and student learning. I am a former middle school teacher and currently an educator, an author of the book Launch, which is all about design thinking and creativity. I'm a speaker, I'm a maker, I'm passionate about seeing schools embrace design thinking and seeing classrooms become bastions of creativity and wonder. And so this is the podcast where I explore these ideas. It's a simple idea. I basically record and talk about the blog posts that are on my blog at spencerauthor.com. So it's nothing fancy. In today's podcast, I'd love to think about this question of what we can learn from three ice cream shops. So what can three different ice cream shop models teach us about choice and differentiation? So weird the way I said models right there. Like models. I don't know where I got that Chicago accent from. But anyway, what are these three different models and what can they teach us about choice and differentiation? So here we go. Baskin-Robbins offers 31 flavors. The rotation changes each month, so I'm guessing there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of flavors that they create. And if you're looking for choice, this place is it. There's a good chance you'll find something that you like at the store, and if not, you are way too picky and you need to re-examine your life and your love of ice cream. But if you're looking for something very specific that nobody in their right mind would offer, that's when you go to Cold Stone Creamery. Here you can order a hot fudge peanut butter and pretzel ice cream, and nobody else is choosing that flavor. It's yours. And there's a good chance you'll get the exact ice cream that you want. And it's amazing. It's personalized. And yet, if you want to own the entire process, you've got to go to a frozen yogurt place. I know, it's not really ice cream. It's, quote, yogurt. And you could probably see my air quotes in the air as I say it, because yogurt is essentially code word for ice cream that pretends not to be ice cream. That's essentially what frozen yogurt is. It's the way that every hipster says, I'm not a hipster. Same kind of idea. And at the Froyo place, you get to decide which flavor you want. There are fewer options than what Baskin-Robbins offers. However, you get to decide on the exact amount you want. You also get to choose the toppings, selecting not only which ones you want, but how much you want of each topping. You own the entire process, and the only thing that they've done is they've set up the system to make it work for you. But you are driving everything at the frozen yogurt place. And it's awesome. So what does this have to do with student choice? This is the, third or fourth podcast on this topic of student choice in the classroom. And I want to connect this sense of the three different models of ice cream shops to the way we try to do student choice in the classroom. When we talk about choice and differentiation, the conversation often revolves around the Baskin-Robbins model. And that's okay. Give students a choice menu and let them decide. On some level, it works. As the teacher, you get to do quality control on the content and on the process. But you own this. You're giving the choice to them. But it can also feel exhausting to create 31 new flavors over and over and over again. And sometimes we shift from differentiated to personalized. Here is when the Cold Stone Creamery model kicks in. And again, I want to point out that the words we use are significant. We're not talking about differentiated instruction. We're talking about personalized learning. So the shift goes from the teacher to the student. Here, students move from choice to freedom in deciding the content. Here, they are not selecting from a list of choices, but rather stating what they want on their own. They are coming up with the choices. There's more agency and more ownership. Student engagement skyrockets in personalized learning. But the teacher still owns the process, and this can be even more exhausting than the Baskin-Robbins model. In fact, this is why so many schools have essentially chosen personalized learning systems that are technological. And these aren't really personalized. They don't typically really allow you to tap into student choice and agency in a powerful way. They're more adaptive than they are choice-driven. In fact, they are essentially like Pandora, when students really would prefer something that's more like Spotify. But that's the system that we go to often because it is so difficult to pull this off as a teacher. But when students own both the content and the process, they shift into this frozen yogurt model. Here they decide what they want to learn by doing it themselves. They might actually have fewer choices, but they have more freedom and a higher level of autonomy. The teacher is still present as an advisor and as an architect of the master system. However, students are working in a self-directed way. They own the process and the product. And if Baskin-Robbins is differentiated instruction and Cold Stone Creamery is personalized learning, frozen yogurt is about empowered students. So the focus has gone from the instruction to the learning to the student. And that's a big shift in the way we think about student choice. If you check it out, I have a diagram. It's really crappy. I drew it in my journal. It's what I sketched out in my journal before I even wrote this blog post or did this podcast. But you can check it out and you can see this gradual shift from one to the next to the next. And it kind of explains the way we view the product, the process, and the goal in all three systems. So you have this idea of the frozen yogurt model, and you want to see it work. But how do you actually pull it off? I mean, how do you actually make this work in your classroom? So about 7 or 8 years ago, I read a book about the founding of Google. It wasn't an education book. It was actually a business book. But I fell in love with this idea of 20% time. Now, a quick side note, the 20% time that we talk about at Google is actually on the decline. And there's a lot of people that think that this is because as Google has gotten bigger, they actually don't value the agency and autonomy of their workers quite as much. And there's a lot more pressure to sustain and maintain what you're doing, and that shifts them away from being quite so innovative. But I still love this idea. Here, workers spend 20% of their time on independent passion projects that may or may not actually benefit the company. Some of the best innovations of Google began with these small passion projects that eventually grew into full-blown Google products. And what it does is it breaks you from the groupthink of the company culture and allows you to do something that you find amazing. And this idea sounded great. I would embrace this frozen yogurt mindset, and students would be self-directed in this 20% time. Now, this 20% time is also called genius hour, and you're going to hear me use both words interchangeably. But as I tried to create this 20% genius hour, I ran into a few snags along the way. And these became really, really frustrating. Students didn't know how to own the process. They just didn't have the skills for it. And I wasn't sure how to assess it. And when you don't assess something, a lot of times it becomes sort of devalued. I couldn't easily align the work with the standards, so I struggled to communicate it to my leadership. And on top of that, I had a hard time proving that they were doing real work and not just having free time. Certain students got frustrated, gave up, and started goofing off. I wasn't sure how to get the right materials to the right students, and they got frustrated. I was too open, and some of the kids treated this time as study hall time to get homework done for other classes. In fact, the quote, best students were the ones that were using the genius hour the worst. It was a mess. Over time, I figured these issues out through trial and error, yet 3 or 4 years into it, I still had major issues. I lacked the systemic framework to pull it off effectively. In other words, our class Genius Hour projects were supposed to work like a frozen yogurt shop, but instead they were a mess of melted yogurt and mismatched candy strewn everywhere. That was around the time that I met my friend AJ Giuliani. As I got to know him through our collaborative work, he began sharing practical tweaks that I could take in our Genius Hour projects, and I began to move things to the next level. I began to refine and improve what I was doing. See, AJ has a way of making complicated systems relatable, practical, and easy to implement without dumbing down or oversimplifying anything. As a result, Genius Hour started to actually work for me. Now, if you're interested in starting a Genius Hour at your own school or in your own classroom, you've really got to check out this self-paced course that he is about to launch. The course includes tons of practical resources, including lesson plans and student resources as well. It's perfect for both the beginner who's just getting started with Genius Hour or for that teacher who's been doing Genius Hour in 20% time for years, but they want to take it to the next level. I want to point out that if you go to my blog post at spencerauthor.com and you see this, you can also click on the link. And when you go and sign in, use the coupon code Spencer, that's my name, and the price drops from $125 down to $99. So you get a little discount. Now, I want to point out that all three of these student choice models are necessary. There's nothing wrong with any of the previously mentioned models. There are times when the entire class needs to work together and there are no options present. They might be engaging in a debate or analyzing an article together, and the lack of choice is precisely what makes the community unified. To borrow the ice cream metaphor, there's nothing wrong with having an entire class share ice cream sandwiches together. It's how we bond as a community. But there are moments when you want to provide more student choice. Here, the Baskin-Robbins way works really, really well. The entire class might need to have a shared process, but they can have multiple options in their content. And this right here is where differentiation kicks in. Other times, you might want to provide specific things for each student, and you shift from differentiated instruction to personalized learning. It takes extra work, a lot of extra work, but it's worth it in the long run. You are meeting with students one-on-one and conferencing or tutoring. You're finding specific things that might engage specific students, and you can't pull this off all the time. But when this happens, it's like magic. Students feel valued and accepted and excited on a personal level. But there are also times for this frozen yogurt mindset. Here you allow students to own the process and the product. They are self-directed, choosing the topic, the themes, the product, the ideas, the questions, based upon their own desires and passions and curiosity and mastery. Now, each process is still necessary. Again, note that Baskin-Robbins as a model, if it's the only model you use in your classroom, you're not going to really honor student agency. But if you only do the frozen yogurt model, your class can be so individualistic that you lose this sense of community as a group. But when you employ all three models, you honor student agency while also developing a cohesive classroom community. The end result is something powerful that honors who students are as individuals, while also honoring the identity and the cohesiveness and the unity of the group. And that's what we want. Higher student engagement, but also students who are more empowered to own the entire learning process. Thank you for listening.